Welcome back. We are back with a new brand, as you will, of our wrestling podcast. We are no longer part of the Fans Network podcast, or Fans Podcast Network, whatever you call it. And we're doing our own thing right now. If you have joined us in the past, we were doing our own thing for a while, and we really loved it. We're glad to have ourselves back. And we have two names right now. We have two names we're going for. We're going for Kings of Pod Style, which is, of course, a Shinsuke Nakamura reference. And Wrestling is Everything. Everything is Wrestling. Wrestling is Everything is Wrestling. So we're going to do a Twitter poll for our fans and our listeners to see if which ones you like better, and that's what we'll call ourselves. We'll have our own Facebook, we'll have our own Twitter, might have our own site. It'll be awesome. But I'm Brian Kluger, and I'm really excited to do this. And I'm, of course, with the amazing, the luchador himself, Tom Nix in San Antonio. How you doing? We are so excited, and we have a great show for you today. We're going to talk about some of the cool feuds going into SummerSlam. We're going to do a whole discussion on the Brock Lesnar Randy Orton angle. We have a few things, but before we get to that, we're getting the band back together. Actually, we do have the band back together. Somebody who has been on vacation, they were suspended for wellness policy violation for about 4 or 5 weeks. Mike Pertill is back on the show. By God.
Don't call it a comeback.
Oh, my God.
I've been here for like 5-10 minutes just getting ready for this thing.
We're so excited to have you back. What have you been doing the past 4 or 5 weeks? What matches have you been in? What have you done to well yourself back to life?
So, a lot of work that I will not ruin this podcast by boring you with. and a lot of self-study. So, you know, been digging into the Cruiserweight Classic a little bit. Was quick on the draw for night one, Battle of Los Angeles tickets for PWG. Super amped about that. And let's see. Yeah.
We had a 3-man party trying for those, and Mike Pertill was the only one that successfully got 3 tickets to PWG night one. I failed and Brian failed.
I was like texting y'all like it's not working or sold out. I was so angry. But
yeah, turns out the super high powered work network really paid off.
It did.
One night only. Yeah.
So I was trying to buy tickets during the main event of Bobby Roode and Samoa Joe versus Shinsuke Nakamura and Finn Balor in San Antonio at the NXT show. That was wrapping up when I was like rampantly refreshing my phone in a crowded theater where I had absolutely no chance of getting through.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
So yeah, we're gonna do the show. We all three of us are here. The band is back together. We've got the pay-per-view on, and
there was one other piece of self-study that I was doing while I was out, just getting myself right. I went back and watched, per a text discussion that the three of us had, I went back and watched the lead-up to and then the actual match, the blindfold match at WrestleMania 7 between the model Rick Martel and Jake the Snake Roberts.
No. Describe to our listeners what a blindfold match is.
So it is exactly what you're thinking. They wore black like hoods, which unfortunately have become, you know, kind of in the popular culture from like terrorist videos in recent years. But these are they're not blindfolds, which probably would have been a little bit less cumbersome. They're actually like hoods that they tie over. So here's the story. And it's so fantastic that I'm just going to tell it to you in its entirety. So, Rick Martel was like a Dolph Ziggler-esque character in the 80s who didn't really have like a gimmick other than just being handsome. And then He was with, he was part of a tag team with Tito Santana. They were called Strike Force. They broke up. He gets repackaged at one point as the model, Rick Martel. And he wore, like, tuxedo jacket, bow tie, no shirt, and briefs as, like, his getup. And he had a French accent. I don't know. I think the French accent was real, but I can't confirm. And he was just, like, real handsome and a jerk. And so that was his whole gimmick, which, you know, tried and true gimmick in wrestling history. And he carried around this cologne that he called Arrogance, which is also very strong. Very strong. So it he had, for some reason, he had, like, a gimmick cologne dispenser that sort of, like, had, like, a gun component to it that he could kind of fire off this fragrance. And so Jake the Snake Roberts is on the Brother Love Show, which, if you're looking for a YouTube deep dive, go on to YouTube and just type Brother Love Show. Every episode's amazing. But it was, you know, like a... We've got Miz TV. It was, you know, one of those type shows. And hosted by Brother Love, who was Dr. Tom Pritchard with red paint all over his face to look like a red-faced televangelist. And Jake Roberts is on the Brother Love Show. Rick Martel interrupts him. There's a scuffle, and he blinds Jake the Snake Roberts by spraying Arrogance in his face. So Jake has, like, a jacked up eye that they manage, like, he has it for his entire, you know, the entire run up to WrestleMania. And this segment was in, like, November. So we're talking months and months. He's got this jacked up eye. And he can't see. So he's just, you know, swinging wildly and can't defend himself. So to level the playing field, they have a blindfold match at WrestleMania. So now neither man can see. And here's the thing, is that it probably, like, what you've got in your head right now is something that sounds just absolutely awful. That, like, you're going to have a fight with minimal contact. What they managed to do is turn it into, like, an audience participation game of Marco Polo. And it's one of, like, the great triumphs in wrestling history, because it's a hilarious match. It's really good. And it has no business being good. No business at all. So I did spend way too much time, like, reliving a mid-card feud from the spring of 1991. But I gotta say, well worth it.
It was well worth it.
10 out of 10 would recommend.
That was so good. That was a great. I liked how you explained that, because now I want to go back and watch it on the WWE Network. That is amazing.
I want to call special attention to the phrase "sprayed in the face with arrogance."
We're all going to get sprayed in the face with arrogance here sooner or later, all over our faces. But as we are, go watch that match right now, and we will. You tell us what you like about it on our Facebook.
Sign up for the WWE Network. Go to WWE.com and in the search bar type in "sprayed in the face with arrogance" and see what comes up.
Yes, please do.
You'll be shocked. There's like 25.
So that's so good. And who wants to know what wrestling pay-per-view I'm watching right now? Nobody.
I'm very curious.
You're very curious.
I'm curious. I'm very curious.
I'm watching No Mercy from 2002. If you remember.
Is that the one where Triple H just completely buried Kane?
That was, yeah, Triple H defeated Kane in the championship unification match. Yeah. And that was also a Hell in a Cell match between Brock Lesnar and Undertaker.
which I remember being pretty good.
Yeah.
But I specifically remember them building up Kane, sort of building up Kane to fight Triple H, and Triple H just destroying everything, because that was kind of the height of Triple H's "I'm going to make sure that no one is perceived to be even half as good as me for any reason."
Well, that was also one where, you know, they had interesting tag teams. Like, they had Kurt Angle and Chris Benoit as a tag team match, and Edge and Rey Mysterio as a tag team. And they also had Booker T and Goldust as a tag team, which I miss, and Chris Jericho and Christian as a tag team.
Yep. If you go and watch a couple months later, Survivor Series 2002 is a pretty good pay-per-view. I kind of soured on the main event, the first ever Elimination Chamber match. It's not as interesting as I remember it being. But that match has a three-way, I guess, kind of a triple threat match, even though there's six people. For the tag team titles, it's Los Guerreros versus Angle and Benoit versus Edge and Rey Mysterio, and that match is off the charts great.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what we're watching right now, or at least I'm watching right now. But let's move on. Let's move on to some feuds. Let's move on to, like, what's really building right now in WWE going into SummerSlam 2016, which is only a couple weeks away. So, I would like to talk about this interesting, odd, weird Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho team up, and how they're just kind of trying to destroy everything. What do you think about this?
I love both of those people. I think they're great heels. I think they're both amazing on the microphone. So I think if you're going to throw anybody against Enzo and Cass who can actually go toe-to-toe with them on the mic, I think this is the right call. Although it's very odd that the Sami Zayn Kevin Owens feud is pretty much just non-existent anymore.
But we talked about that one time earlier on an earlier podcast, and we thought that would be pretty cool for them to, you know, settle on that for a little while and then come back like really, really into it. Because I could see Kevin Owens turning on Jericho, and then maybe what do you think? Yeah. Zayn coming in?
The weird thing is that Sami, despite being the winner of their match at Battleground, doesn't right now. Like, that's the weird part. It's not that they're doing separate things and being separate. It's that Sami doesn't have a program at all, despite being the winner. That's the weird thing to me.
All right. So yeah, it's funny to see Kevin Owens kind of like take a side with somebody, and Jericho and Owens are so good right now. And so, I mean, Enzo and Cass, of course, you just can't compete with them on the mic, really, unless you just talk just bad, bad stuff to them. So, I mean, I think I'm looking forward to this whole Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho thing. Another really good feud right now, of course, is Sasha Banks with your favorite, Tom.
My favorite, Charlotte?
Yes.
I like Charlotte. I think she needs help on the mic sometimes, but I think she's getting one of the best female wrestlers they have on the entire roster. She's been great the last couple weeks.
So do you think that both Sasha and Charlotte need some help with the mic? I mean, they're both good. They're both good in the ring. They're both decent on the mic, but they probably could use a little bit of help here and there, right?
For commentary on how good they are on the mic, let's turn to Mike.
Yeah, Mike, what do you think? Is Mike there? Mike's gone. Or Mike's on mute. Mike muted himself. I don't know what he's doing.
I'm back. Sorry about that. So, you know, I think that they're actually pretty good, given that they're, you know, they have to give these promos that are clearly really tightly scripted. And, you know, like last week when they were in the ring with Enzo and Jericho, it just was a cluster. There were just too many people trying to do too many things. I think Sasha's very good on the microphone, and I think Charlotte is pretty solid. But Charlotte should be you know, Charlotte would benefit greatly from having a mouthpiece, if only there were somebody who had a connection to her who was notoriously good on the microphone. They might be able to work something out, but it's just a bad spot for them when they're asked to kind of carry segments that are, you know, really challenging to do. I mean, like, that segment last week was the kind of thing that you would throw The Rock and Mick Foley and Stone Cold Steve Austin into and hope it works out. And to have it be three people who have a combined, you know, none of them have been on the main roster for a full year yet, that's impossibly difficult. And so, you know, I just thought they've been put in a couple bad spots. I will say, though, that as much as I love Sasha and, you know, think she's the deserving women's champion, anytime I've watched wrestling with a casual fan or someone who's not really a fan, they have a really hard time believing that Charlotte is ever going to lose a fight.
It's difficult because Charlotte is such a hoss in the ring. She knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
And that's
an incredibly valuable thing to have on the roster, is someone who brings that kind of legitimacy. And I think that when it comes down to it, you know, she is going to be, you know, she should be a main event level talent in the women's division for as long as she's in the company.
Yeah.
You know, she should lose very, very infrequently.
Yeah. Now I want to talk about, which was surprised me, you know, one of our favorite wrestlers we'd like to talk about on this show. I'm wearing his shirt, Rusev, the Bulgarian Brute. Rusev's new feud, which will go into SummerSlam, is, of course, Roman Reigns. And on this last episode of Raw, during Rusev and Lana's, like, kind of, like, marriage, you know, celebrate their marriage with the cake, Roman Reigns came out and it seemed like he had, like, the best promo of his life. He was, like, the charming, or not charming, but, like, he was, like, witty and seemed to have a lot of fun in the ring. What do you think, Tom?
First of all, we need to say that... first of all, I don't understand what happened, but Mike thought something was amazingly hilarious.
I thought that your hesitation and how you were going to tactfully disagree with Brian was just cracking me up. It was so obvious that you wanted to shit all over the promo from Monday night, and Brian put you in a position where it was like, how am I going to get out of this? And so, that did crack me up.
Well, first of all, we need to establish that he's not a good guy. He's not a bad guy. The guy's on the mid-card.
He's the mid-card guy.
And that's I think, the place he needs to be. But honestly, Brian, and much to Mike's chagrin, I'm going to agree with you, even though I think the talking points that were written for him, stupid and bad, he gave that promo so much better than he's given every other promo that he's ever been written, because he did end up, he felt like he was just hanging loose, having a good time, like, I'm just here, I'm going to kind of, you know, take a couple jabs at you, I'm not going to take this too seriously. It showed more character and more personality than he's ever showed as a main event wrestler. Now, at the same time, I think if you're going to take anybody seriously, you take Rusev seriously, because he breaks people's back for a living. I think giving him a win is a bad choice at this time. I think throwing him in a feud with Rusev and Rusev retaining, not only does that make Rusev look good, it also makes the U.S. title look legit. And like I think I said last week, I really have no problem with Roman being the guy to beat Rusev, but I think you need to establish Rusev and the belt more than you need to build up Roman Reigns right now, because the audience still, generally speaking, does not like him. And if you remove him from the world title situation, into a mid-card title situation and immediately have him win that belt, you're basically doing the same thing as you were with the world title. You're just giving a guy a championship because you think he deserves it, even though he hasn't won any matches. He's lost the last three he's been in, effectively. He hasn't earned anything in order to fight Rusev, so if he just beats him where everyone else has failed, you're still going to get some blowback. So I think his character is on the right track. I think you need to let him be a little more loose and make him a little more improv-y. I'm real tired of dick jokes for all of their for all of their insults, but it's a WWE babyface, baby. What you gonna do? So, yes, Brian, I generally agree with you, and I'm interested in their SummerSlam match, but I'm still on that thing where I think it'll be a good match, but if Roman goes over, I think they're going to find themselves in the same predicament they were 2 months ago.
Yeah, they need to have him lose, and if it's to have Lana interfere and make Rusev and Lana look more evil, that's fine. I just think Rusev needs to retain. Mike, do you like that idea, or do you want to see Roman win?
No, I am a little disappointed that this is the feud for these guys at SummerSlam, only because I think a Roman Reigns Rusev match is a SummerSlam main event, it's a WrestleMania main event, but it's that when both guys are firing on all cylinders, and clearly Roman's on his way to some extent right now. Rusev is still on his way up the card, and it feels like an uncomfortable match to me. Match as in pairing, not match as in fight.
Because Rusev was like just fighting anybody any week, you know, just a different person until Roman came out. So it just feels kind of new
I feel like if that's Cesaro in the Reigns slot, then you have this sort of, you know, you have a real question as to, oh, wow, are they going to go with Cesaro as the U.S. champion, or is Rusev going to retain? And you know, if he retains, that basically elevates him another level on the card. In this context, I feel like it sort of doesn't really help either guy. So I'm a little disappointed to see it. Having said all that, I think that, you know, Rusev has been a miracle worker and has made, you know, Titus O'Neil matches compelling, and, you know, he managed to get, kind of great matches out of people over the summer. I'm sure that this is going to be an excellent match at SummerSlam. I just would have loved to have seen it happen, you know, 3 months from now when Reigns is kind of figured things out Rusev's figured things out and it's better. So, you know, not perfect timing, but having said that, two really good guys can't be too upset about it.
But speaking of uncomfortable matches, let's talk about the main event U.S. title match that started at 9:58 p.m.
Yeah. Yes. Not a great look.
That was, yeah. And,
obviously the match is great, well, sort of great, because, I mean, Cesaro and Rusev work awesome together, but what a completely out-of-nowhere, weird, no stakes, no anything. You know, Cesaro comes out, like you said, at 9:58 p.m. on a show that ends at 10, effectively, even though with Overrun it's normally 10:07 or whatever. No build for it. And, like, I think you just said it, Mike, why isn't, like, Cesaro and Shane Unless we're fighting, and I think Stephanie or Mick said that whoever won basically had earned themselves a title shot in the future. Why wasn't Cesaro versus Rusev booked for SummerSlam then? Like he beat someone to get a number one contendership. He's a babyface. Everyone is behind. He would 100% fit the role of U.S. champion, but somehow his slot is 3 minutes before the show goes off the air in a completely out of nowhere match that interrupts the GM versus GM segment. It was one of the most bizarre, unforeseen endings to a Raw I've seen in a long, long, long time. What a weird thing to do. And then you go off the air, wins. Like, Cesaro's match was basically just to establish that Roman Reigns is a thing again and everyone should like him. What a weird thing to do.
Yeah, it was because it was, Cesaro has to prove himself or whatever. It was weird.
He beat Sheamus twice in a row, so he has proven himself.
Agreed. that is weird. So let's move on. Let's move on to the weird, the Dean Ambrose versus Dolph Ziggler feud. That's going to happen at SummerSlam for the World Heavyweight Championship. And it looks like on SmackDown, the end of SmackDown, Dean Ambrose did dirty deeds on him after they were a tag team. And I don't know. It almost is looking that Ziggler's the good guy here and Dean Ambrose is the bad guy here. But I don't know. I just think this is a very weird pair-up. And I'm glad to see Dolph in something, relevant again, but it's just it's like a weird pairing. It's a weird feud that's really not going anywhere because they're both kind of liked by everybody. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit concerning that the WWE title match is probably, I don't know, fourth on the card, behind Lesnar, Orton, Reigns, Rusev, and the Universal title match in terms of, the level of hype that the WWE's been giving it. I think that's kind of disappointing to see in week three of the brand split that they've already sort of established the WWE title as the B show. But I actually really like the feud, and I think that it's made Ambrose look great as the kind of guy. Like, I don't think he's done anything that's inconsistent with his character, but I think what he's shown is that he really wants to keep the title, and he's not going to sit back and let Ziggler, kind of nudge him off of his perch. He's going to sort of protect his ground, and I think he's done a really good job of communicating that the past couple weeks. So, I'm really interested in the match. I think it's going to be excellent. I hope that it's, Ambrose does a really good job of communicating that what he's doing is real. Ziggler is the absolute worst at that. I think
he's the opposite.
Ziggler goes out of his way to make the point that he is a great performer, even in the context of a competition. So it creates this, he can't just invest in the actual performance itself. So to me, I think it's a dangerous pairing in that the match could end up being kind of a flop, but there's a huge upside here in that it could kind of bring out something in Dolph that is sort of the one thing missing from him as a performer.
Yeah. What do you think, Tom?
I don't think Dolph's necessarily Dean's necessarily being a tweener or anything. I don't mind where Dean is at in this feud, but this week's SmackDown was like the SmackDowniest SmackDown of all time. Like the main event was just like every pre-split SmackDown. It was just a tag team of two semi-main event wrestlers that there was miscommunication on the good guy's side, and oh, maybe they're going to fight each other. And it was just like, this isn't doing anything. This is maybe the least interesting way you can build this story. And I'm hoping that if the SummerSlam main event, which I don't think this will be the main event. I think the main event of SummerSlam will either be Rollins versus Balor, or it'll be Orton versus Lesnar, which is the actual main event. But I think there's a chance that we get a heel turn out of this main event. I'm hoping it's not Dean, and I'm hoping it is Ziggler. I hope that Dean just pretty much take Ziggler out, basically, and Ziggler gets super, super, super frustrated and mad and just starts taking it out on Dean and beating him up and beating him up and beating him up, and characters need to do something different because this build hasn't been super interesting, aside from that great promo that Dean cut 2 weeks ago, basically calling Ziggler out and all of his bullshit, you know, like, yeah, great, you're a good performer. Yeah, great, you steal the show. Okay, I win matches and you don't, so you're not going to beat me because you're going to steal the show and I'm going to walk out still champion because you never win.
Yeah.
And that's just true, you know?
Yeah, I don't know where they're going to go with this. I really don't think they're going to have Ziggler win at all. I think Ambrose will just still retain because, I mean, I just don't see Ziggler being the face of SmackDown right now. But
no, well, unless he's the heel of SmackDown, because AJ is stuck with Cena for a little while. And, I mean, they have enough bad guys, but I feel like a Ziggler heel turn extremely useful. For them at the moment, because that character is stale as hell. There isn't really, I can't think of the last time I saw a fan wearing a Dolph Ziggler t-shirt in the audience ever in the last months. I mean, he doesn't sell merch. No one cares about his character because he has lost so much and been stuck in mid-card nothing feuds that went nowhere for so long that while people still like him and appreciate him as a wrestler, over the way Dean Ambrose is over. And I don't think having a face versus face match like the game said is doing really either guy any huge favors, because Dean kind of has to get an edge to him that's kind of a jerk because he is champion and he has to protect turf, and Dolph Ziggler has to cut the same exact promo he's been saying for 3 years straight. And 3 years is a long time to watch someone that you like lose and lose and lose and lose and lose and never go anywhere. It's easy just to give up on him. And I think a lot of people just be like, great. Yeah. Okay, if he wins, I guess that'll be cool, but he's not going to win because...
Yeah. What's the point? I don't know. All right, let's go to the other side, of the Raw side. Let's talk about Finn Balor's first pay-per-view on the main card with one of the best wrestlers, Seth Rollins. It's clear that everybody loves Seth Rollins, but he's the bad guy. And you have Finn Balor, who I would say most people know. But yeah, like we've said before, Finn, in order to be a main eventer, needs to open up his repertoire to more moves instead of his like four basic things he did in NXT forever. I mean, I like this feud. I think it's going to be a really cool match if Finn opens up. I don't know if he can do that. I hope he does, because Seth can do pretty much anything and everything. And if Finn doesn't, it's going to be kind of a bad match. That's what I think.
Yeah, I don't think Finn can actually have a truly bad match, and hopefully, maybe because this is a larger audience, people will like the sling blade, and they'll like the double foot stomp, and they'll like that kind of stuff, but I think the challenge here as well is that if you didn't watch NXT, you're basically, they're hyping the demon so much, which I don't mind, because it's a pretty cool thing that people need to get excited for. But at the same time, one of the interesting things about Finn Balor in NXT was he was a good wrestler who was cool and quick and everything. And then when he came out as a demon the first time, no one really saw it coming, and he felt a little more edgier and whatnot.
Yeah.
Now, especially because we've seen him the last year, when he puts the demon paint on, it means that he's harder to beat, but he doesn't really do it. So, and the challenge here is that mainstream audiences have seen him basically wrestle two matches, I guess maybe three total, before they're going to see this Demon Balor, who they're, you know, pimping up super huge. You know, they did that great segment this week where he talked about, like, his Irish history and all the Irish monsters and all that stuff, and then ended it with the... which is all great and everything, but unless you make a marked difference between Demon Balor and regular Balor, I don't really know what the audience is really going to think about it. So we'll see at SummerSlam. And apparently this week on Raw, or this coming week on Raw, Seth Rollins is specifically calling out Dean and Balor. So I'm not sure if he'll come out in full paint on Monday just to answer questions or do an interview-style thing or a face-to-face promo, or if that won't happen at all. But that, I'm very interested to see where that segment goes, because if you let the paint happen before SummerSlam, that's not bad, but it's also really weird that you would. So we'll find out in a week. Or actually, not a week. We'll find out in a couple of days.
Yeah. What do you think, Tom? Are you pro Finn Balor or pro Seth Rollins?
Mike?
Yeah. So I think that, unfortunately, what this feud has shown me so far is that on August 11th, 2016, Seth Rollins is a lot better than Finn Balor. And, you know, their face-to-face interactions, their, you know, the way they've interacted in this feud, you know, and it's not, I think Finn Balor's excellent. I think he's great. But Seth Rollins is so comfortable in his role and is so, you know, he's so good that it's really hard to introduce Finn Balor and convince people that he's on Seth Rollins' level. And so, you know, it kind of worries me that they're gonna go to the Demon 6 days before SummerSlam, when, to Tom's point, like, the whole thing that was exciting about the Demon for someone who wasn't as familiar with Prince Devitt before they came to NXT was that when that Demon came out, I was like, what the hell is happening? You know, it was one of those great moments in wrestling fandom where the delivery exceeds expectations. And if they say, oh, well, hey, Monday Night Raw audience, here's the Demon, order the WWE Network, and you'll get to see him fight. It's a totally different dynamic than if his music hits and he's crawling around with those ridiculous braids, and, you know, maybe he pulls a chainsaw out, who knows. Like, it's just such a different feeling to sort of get introduced and then wait 6 days for the payoff than it is to just be blown away by the sight of it. Especially because nothing's going to top a SummerSlam crowd in Brooklyn, you know, eagerly anticipating its arrival when, you know, I think, Tom, Raw's in Texas this week, right?
I'm going. I'll be there.
So that's awesome. But it won't be the same level of, like, diehard fan that's at the major pay-per-views. Yeah. And I think that it won't be, you know, there's going to be a big chunk of people who are just kind of like, this is weird. And I think that it's going to undercut the potential of the Demon character. So, you know, I don't know. I've been pretty disappointed with the feud only because I feel like they are doing all the right things with Finn Balor. They've just put him in a situation where it's impossible for him to outshine Seth Rollins in this feud.
Yeah.
And it's tough when you're first, you know, how they introduce you to the audience is a situation where you're not the most compelling guy on the screen.
Okay. Yeah, no, I agree. I get that. Before we get into our main discussion on Brock Lesnar and Randy Orton, does it shock anybody else besides me, because it blows my fucking mind that The Miz is still the Intercontinental Champion? And what do you think about his feud right now?
Well, who's he feuding with? Darren Young?
No, they're on different brands.
Yeah.
He's fighting with Apollo Crews.
Ah, okay. So then, yeah, that does shock me, because they've done nothing to they've done nothing to develop Apollo Crews, even really since he got to NXT. And so they're just like, hey, you should just believe that this guy's awesome because he looks awesome. And yeah, that's it. And it's a pretty terrible...
But isn't it weird that The Miz still has the Intercontinental? I mean, he's had it for now a long time, and even though he hasn't really defended it a whole lot, but it's just, I like his character, The Miz's character, and I like his wife being by his side, because they're just so evil together, but it's just, oh my gosh, I don't get where it's going. And I mean, Apollo Crews is awesome, but yeah, like you said, it is just... He's just a guy that looks cool and can do flips. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think that's the challenge with Apollo Crews' character is the way they've booked him to come across is kind of like nice guy who's happy to be here. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, like you know, when he wins matches, he kind of is surprised about it and super happy, and he's just super jazzed when he comes down to the ring, and he does his cool flippy things, and he does his cool moves. But really, man, it's just awesome to be around. I'm just super happy I'm in the WWE. Whereas it's like a 6'1", massive black dude who can do backflips and power bombs, and he should just be decimating people. Like, he should be coming out there and being like, oh, okay, am I fighting Neville? Okay, I can also do a shooting star press. You want to see me do that? Oh, hold on a second, I'm fighting, okay, I can actually pick him up and throw him across the ring. That I can do that too. And they're not really showing the depth of athletic talent and the determination and, like, I guess, like, because I don't think Apollo Crews should ever be, like, a quote-unquote aggressive wrestler. But, like, they're missing the fact that essentially this guy is 100% the total package. He's a super fast, super athletic, super strong dude that is just kind of like the happy-go-lucky guy who has, you know, who loves his job and loves being in wrestling. And that's not the person you need to do. I think this is the case with Rollins versus Balor and Miz versus Crews. Is you really have the opportunity for Rollins to just be like, who is Finn Balor? Why does anyone think he can beat me? Does anyone even know who he is? And the same thing with Miz, is being like, oh, okay, cool. You're that guy who came up from NXT that never really did anything. Okay, so I'll see you at SummerSlam. You're going to lose real fast because I'm the Miz. I'm the seven, you know, five-time IC champion, WrestleMania main eventer. See you there. You're going to lose. Bye. And then have these two people be like, oh no, I'm awesome, and I can hang with anybody, and I can do stuff that you had no idea I could do. And I really think you're missing out on these two really good heels just completely underselling the abilities that their opponents have, because I think Finn in real life is so humble and nice. I think some of that comes across in his character. Like, he doesn't have the edge that he needs to have, even with Demon, it's become so commonplace that there needs to be a true distinction of, like, the perfect way to spell that Seth Rollins Finn Balor feud, and I apologize for going back to that, is, you know, Finn pulling out the victory no one expected him to get, and Rollins just kind of completely shitting on it, just basically being like, great, you won your first match here, but it was a triple, you know, a four-way match where you basically could have pinned anybody and won. So I'll see you in a one-on-one match, which you can't win because you're a nobody from NXT. And just keep shitting on him, shitting on him, and shitting on him until the Demon shows up at SummerSlam and Rollins has absolutely no idea what to expect. And that's a way that you really sell that feud. And it really hasn't. I wish heels were actually jerks, yeah. And not just kind of, right. You know, not just funny condescending, but truly, honestly, jerks to their opponents. And it seems to be not something that happens that often.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, let's.
So at least we've got the one. We kind of saved the best for last, in my opinion, which is wrestling hero Randy Orton versus. Disgraced MMA cheater Brock Lesnar, who, as noted in the Dean Ambrose Stone Cold podcast, which we'll probably talk more about next
week. I did see this segment.
Is lazy, is artistically bankrupt, and who is all about Brock and was unwilling to do anything at WrestleMania. So, knowing all that, gentlemen, what are you guys thinking about the Orton-Lesnar feud, which, as Tom correctly pointed out, is the true main event of SummerSlam?
So I'm thinking, I mean, I'm looking forward to this match, and I've been a Randy Orton fan for so long. He's known as the Legend Killer. His RKO, if anybody can kick out of it right away, it's Brock Lesnar, which will make for a really cool spot. But if anything can beat Brock Lesnar, I think it actually will be Randy Orton. Now, the thing is, we know Brock Lesnar wants to go back into the UFC and fight more. Do you think he will do this? Do you think that by, you know, going to the UFC, saying all the things he did about WWE, and then his, you know, the drugs testing positive for him, do you think that means he will lose this match, go back to UFC for a little bit, then come back, you know, at a later date, and that gives Randy Orton a big push?
He's straight up banned from UFC.
Correct.
They did ban him because I thought that they hadn't banned him yet.
They have not yet. So he has his hearing, I think, on August 23rd. But he tested positive for an estrogen blocker that, like, it's not a situation where he had an abnormal testosterone reading and he can then go in and show that his testosterone levels are unnaturally high and he's got, you know, some kind of exemption. There's really no way around having a drug in your system that's only used for fertility treatments or, you know, there's no real way I can see him getting out of this one. And so he's going to be banned from competition for what should be 2 years as a first-time offender. And if that's the case, then I think he's right back to where he was last year, which is admitting that his UFC career is over. Now, if he wants to continue to make what I imagine is probably several million dollars a year doing minimal work and being artistically bankrupt, then he's gonna stick around and stick out his WWE contract. I don't think that WWE necessarily has the balls to job him out in any fashion. You know, like, I don't think they really have the guts to punish him by making him look like anything less than the absolute most dominant guy they have. And so, to me, you know, I'd be shocked if Orton beats him at SummerSlam. But it's definitely put me, you know, the last 3 weeks with Lesnar have definitely put me in a place where I've switched entirely from I want to see Lesnar suplex him 100 times and kill him to I actually will be rooting for Randy Orton.
No, yeah, me too. And it's weird that, you know, when Randy first came back, he made the comment of no enhancements needed. And nobody talked about that. Nobody has brought it up in WWE. I feel like that's like a good jab at Lesnar as far as the feud goes. But
Personally, for me, Brock Lesnar's stock has never been lower in my eyes than it is right now. I think it's a combination of, like, when he won that match against Mark Hunt, I was, like, super stoked. I was like, okay, this kind of legitimizes pro wrestling, or at least it legitimizes the people who participate in pro wrestling. That's a good look. This guy is a freak of nature. Like, that immediately should put him back in a huge thing for WWE. and it should make UFC beneficial for everybody to have him win, even if it, you know, maybe it was rigged, maybe it wasn't rigged, who gives a shit. He won, and I was like, okay, this is good for everyone involved that this happened and went down that way. But then as soon as the bust for the PED happened, I just lost all interest in Brock Lesnar at that point. And had you talked to me, like, had you told me in June that we are going to, that, like, SummerSlam is going to be Randy Orton versus Brock Lesnar, I would have been like, okay, I guess that could be good, but, like, Randy's going to get killed, right? Like, that's, what's the point of even doing it? He's just going to get killed. Now, with the PED stuff and Orton kind of just hitting on, or basically, like, just knocking him out with some of those RKOs and knocking him out with some of his little punch-up lines at the Jericho segment, combined with the fact that, like, that Dean Ambrose, like Mike said, just completely shit all over Brock Lesnar in that podcast. Just like, he doesn't give a shit. He's just here to suplex people and get paid $1 million. I don't fucking care. Like, he just shit on him. I honestly, like, I'm kind of with Mike. Like, I don't think they have the balls to do it. But I think the best thing they can do is have Randy Orton destroy Brock Lesnar, and not like you know, Cena Lesnar destroying a Lesnar, but like I think Randy needs a solid definitive win, because he's going to be around on every show. You have to build SmackDown as a super huge brand, because John Cena is not going to be around full time anymore. And Dean Ambrose is popular, but like Randy Orton getting a legit win over a strong fashion really makes SmackDown worth watching. And like I said, I personally, I'm just like, okay, if Brock Lesnar never shows up again, I'm not going to be super sad about it, because he only shows up four times a year generally to begin with, and yeah. if he's a cheater in real life and is non-creative in the ring and isn't willing to give back to people that do this full time, fuck him. Just let him be a millionaire in Canada and never talk to another human being again. That's what he wants, so let's just do that.
Which is sad, because he's so entertaining, and you know, the last time we saw him actually fight in the ring was WrestleMania, and his like street fight against Dean Ambrose was like the worst match we've ever seen. I mean, it was just so boring.
It was the most disappointing match we've ever seen. I mean, yeah, that was the thing. And Ambrose talks about this in the podcast, that, you know, all those hardcore legends that he interacted with in the lead up to WrestleMania, you know, because he had to basically sell most of that match on his own, all of that stuff was supposed to tie into a broader story. And he pitched a million things, and, you know, according to him, Brock just said no, and, you know, and that was that. So, you know, I think that it's really incredible that the one thing that I think could come out of this is Lesnar could be the ultimate chicken shit heel, right? I mean, if you're Brock Lesnar and you're an absolute killing machine, and you're also, you know, you're also kind of unwilling to do anything, they could manage to turn that into, you know, an interesting wrinkle to his character. Now, I'm guessing that while he's still appealing drug suspension, he's going to be pretty protective of his integrity, and I could see that, you know, I could see him being protective of his on-screen character to that extent, but that's my only hope with him, because I completely agree with Tom. I'm less interested in Brock Lesnar today than I've ever been.
Yeah, I mean, because he just comes out, he stands there and kind of hops around while Paul Heyman does all of his stuff, and he literally shoulders people, he suplexes people, and then supposedly somebody takes out his leg and he's down for a little while, and then he can do an F5, and it's just, he needs more because, I mean, going back and watching all these old pay-per-views with him in it, he was in a lot. He did a lot. He used to do high-flying things. But now he's just, I don't know, he's become just the same thing that we've seen forever, but I guess people like him because he is the beast. He's just...
Well, he is the most legitimate killer they've ever had.
Yes.
Oh, that's definitely true. But for me, I think a lot of the mystique is gone now because I know that he is a cheater. You know what I mean? Like, this is like finding out that Milli Vanilli doesn't actually sing their songs. You know, it's just like, okay, yeah, he was a crazy who could throw you across the ring, and he was just a once-in-a-lifetime genetic freak, but then he makes this big to-do about doing a legitimate fight, and then he has to cheat to win it. And it's just like, okay, I'm not interested anymore. You know, that one thing is like, well, now a lot of that whole, a genetic freak, once-in-a-lifetime athlete is just kind of thrown out the window because he isn't. So it's kind of frustrating. So I mean, Ansel Lesnar wins this match because again, I feel like anyone going to him and saying, "Hey, you're gonna job to a guy," is not really something Brock wants to hear. And Brock will do whatever Brock wants to do because Brock has that company by the balls. But at the same time, like, if he wins, I just don't have the same interest in seeing Brock Lesnar that I did a few months ago, and it's just disappointing because I really thought the UFC deal was massive for both sides. Like, I thought it was one of the best things they could have possibly done, even though it was a huge risk that one of their top guys could get seriously hurt, or one of their top guys could get one of their top guys could just straight up lose to a guy, and then it would kind of be like, oh yeah, right, by the way, wrestling is super fake, which, you know, that is what it is. But like, you know, I was super excited to see that happen, and then the victory was great, and then the victory was taken away from us, sort of, and it was just like, okay, cool, you know, that's over and done with. The Brock Lesnar experiment should be on its way out. I mean, before, you would have this monster show up once every 4 months as a special attraction, and that makes sense, but now he's just, you know, with the combination of the Dean Ambrose interview and everything else, he just kind of seems like an asshole who needs to cheat to win. And I've lost a lot of interest in the Brock Lesnar character because of the Brock Lesnar person, you know?
Yeah, I really hope that if this match goes any way like he did at WrestleMania with Dean Ambrose, then it's just kind of like, why even have Brock Lesnar come back ever at all?
So there could be one way. Brian, do you have a towel nearby?
Oh my God, I think I know where you're going.
So the one solution here is Lesnar destroys Orton and, you know, leaves him laying, and, you know, essentially just basks in the fact that he's a filthy cheater and WWE doesn't have the balls to suspend him. He's going to just continue to run roughshod, and our one true American Olympic hero, Kurt Angle, makes his glorious return, defeats Brock, and becomes the new special attraction, legitimate athlete, competitor in WWE.
I just almost passed out.
You know, yeah. He only has to wrestle every 4 months, and he basically rights the wrongs. You know, he goes to everybody, right? He goes to the Big Show, he goes to the Undertaker, he goes to even like Triple H, goes to Cena, everybody who Brock Lesnar defeated in his run, and is like, you were cheated. I'm gonna give you a fair fight, and then he basically goes out a conquering hero.
Oh my God! Why do you tell me these things now?
thanks to advances in podcasting technology, we actually have the ability to broadcast what is going inside of Brian Kluger's head right now, and it sounds something like this.
That's exactly what's going through my head right now. And my soul, my heart, and my dick.
You know, I don't think we're going to top that. I think we probably need to wrap this podcast up.
Yeah, because we're right at an hour. I mean, that we don't. And so before we say goodbye, we just want to remind you that we're going to go on our Twitter, we're going to go on our Facebook, and we're going to do a poll to, you know, you tell us what you want our podcast to be called, whether it be Wrestling is Everything, Everything is Wrestling, or Kings of Pod Style. And let's what we've been doing, you know, we've done this for a while. Let's keep this Champion of Champions going, you know? Let's do this Champion of Champions. So who's the Champion of Champions right now?
To be actually, you know, crowned Universal title.
Okay, so
I think that's been the best build. I'm going with the Universal title.
Okay. Tom?
This is a tough one for me because the SmackDown title hasn't been super interesting. I actually don't think they've done a great job of building the Universal title. The women's title has kind of fallen off in the last couple weeks. Rusev is super strong, but even that feud isn't very interesting. The Intercontinental feud isn't very interesting. Selling the tag team titles with Gallows and Anderson showing up in lab coats talking about dick injuries.
Yep.
And there just isn't a lot happening. So you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say that given the strength of this week's episode, I'm going to say that the Champion of Championships is the Cruiserweight Classic.
Nice. 100% agree. And I just want to say to end this podcast, Cedric Alexander versus Kota Ibushi was probably one of the best matches I've seen since Nakamura versus Sami Zayn back at NXT Dallas. And Ibushi won, but the crowd was so the crowd, it came on already. Cedric Alexander was so over with the crowd. The crowd was chanting his name that transitioned into them chanting, "Please sign Cedric." And then Triple H came out and was like, "We'll sign him." That was so cool.
Spoiler alert.
Oh, I guess. Welcome back, Mike. I hope you enjoyed watching that episode later.
Hey, it was already on. Yeah. I thought you were watching it.
That Triple H thing doesn't ruin the surprise at all. that doesn't sound like the kind of thing I would think is really cool and would be really excited about. So I'm glad we hit that here on the podcast.
That was just, you know, just that was a welcome back for your policy, your wellness policy violation.
Yeah, that was the super kick in the face that I was bracing for.
Anyway, go back and watch that match, even though you know who wins, and that kind of is a bummer because that match is legitimately great, great. Yeah, it was fantastic, and yeah, like I said, I mean, I know it's technically cheating. But, I mean, shoot, like, as far as title pictures build, did you all watch NXT this week?
No. Yeah.
Shinsuke Nakamura waltzing and dancing up to Samoa Joe, who is being restrained by half a dozen security guards, like, foaming at the mouth trying to get to Shinsuke. Shinsuke waltzing up, prancing around, dancing around him, and then reaching out and tweaking his nose a little bit was the best title feud that happened this week.
I can't wait to see it.
Nakamura was just incredible. He was so great.
He just is great. And I'm so excited and so scared for his main roster debut because he is immediately going to be like the best thing on whatever brand he's on. But yes, he's so strange that I hope that audiences get behind him. But if history has shown anything, three weird black dudes in tie-dye clothes or pastel-colored clothes are almost the most over people in wrestling. So I think a, you know, just weirdly prancing, dancing Japanese man in flowy robes can be as over as them, but I just hope it happens because he is so special and so awesome that if he's just stuck fighting The Miz for the Intercontinental title, it's going to be a bummer.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think they'll figure it out.
Okay,
but that is for another day.
That is our podcast. We got the band back together. We will be back next week as well. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I'm so happy that Mike's back. It's nice to have the Standard Three Men booth back in action. And sometime or by this time next week, when we record our technically, I guess, third episode under our new moniker, we will officially have a new name for our podcast, a new home, a new name, a new attitude. We've got a whole bunch of ideas floating around for this. We've got a whole bunch of stuff in the pipeline that we can't wait to try out, and we will see what happens. So I'm very excited about the future, gentlemen.
It's going to be awesome. Until next week, we say the yes chant.